alarm buzz? We have enough minutes and we have around. We have two entities led by the RTOs. We have seen the board members at the right time. We will all introduce ourselves. We think we must take the opportunity to now open the meeting. We have allowed a little bit of space for all of us to settle. It is not often that we meet on top of Cape Town, see Parliament from above. So we're not sure, Minister, whether it's because yourself and the DM happen to be here today. When we're not around, we were really meeting in the basement, almost the lowest standard. Thank you very much for coming, Minister. Thank you very much, DM. The portfolio copy without DM is usually not a normal, you know, portfolio commission meeting, because we are so used to DM attending on behalf of you, Minister. So we appreciate that. But even without the two of you, your staff is always very regular. They are always here with us. So we sometimes think they are now part of us, that the ministry. Thank you very much. We want to welcome all of you, honourable members. I can see that you are very colourful today. Listen, Jogo, I can see you didn't want honourable Matela to overtake you. Thank you very much, and I can see honourable Adams is putting up the belt that I think people are advised that it's on top of the ground. So it's only myself who are not aware. That will be on top of the town. So thank you very much. We want to start with the IDT while we are still fresh, so able to read it in between the lines. So we would then come to the agreement, which we don't really accept problems. So we will also do the introduction as we usually do, starting with the honourable members of Parliament. Nomtu, you will be assisting us with the mic. When members, so that members are not running around when you are around, it's not really a good thing, is it? So that's where we'll start. But once that is done, we will hand over to the minister for few remarks. All these entities belong to the minister. So when they are not doing well, minister, we have a problem with you not doing well. So they also belong to the department. The department cannot say, no. We have a field for unqualified audit. It's only these entities that are spoiling the whole thing. No, it's the department that must ensure that they are not sleeping on duty. So entities have a mother and father. And the mother and father are both the department and the minister. So, but when you are in the entity, you have CEO, you have board members, so you have other senior executives. So we expect more from these people. We really expect more. This thing that people are now always preparing themselves to give the best excuses is not helpful. Including promising of now this year things will be changed. And then you count the years down the line, you don't see any change. If you see a change, it will be a movement from adverse, but because adverse situation to a qualified situation. Both of them are still bad. So there is really little for us as a portfolio committee to appreciate. Not for me to talk, those were welcoming remarks. All of you are welcome. We appreciate that in spite of the problems, you are here. Sometimes the CEOs, when things are difficult, you consider even sending us a sick note, but you are here, so we are happy. Contrary, you are here, so in spite of your problems. So yeah, that's what you are paid for. You must come and tell members of parliament, why are you not sorting out this ship? We will then introduce ourselves. My name is Humphrey Menezi. I'm the chair of the portfolio of public works. Where is Nonto?
Good morning, everyone. My name is Freddy Adams.
Good
morning, I'm Dennis Ryder. Dennis Ryder.
Member of this committee.
Then deal with small points that I made for what the apologies. We'll give the secretary of the committee to advise us the honor.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to everyone present. The apologies that were registered in our office were that of Honorable Madoka and Honorable Matebe, who are of sick. Honorable four ladies in Thailand on party business, Honorable in the Eastern people on the party business. I would like to meet the Honorable Bhutani is running a bit late since he is meant to be in this meeting. I'm not sure, but I shall confirm that they come to my colleagues. Just two announcements. One is the bathroom. As you go out of the penthouse, they're on the right hand side. And the second thing, we've got an access card. As you know, that coming up here is not really possible without the access card. So if anyone wants to go downstairs and then come up, they need to get the access card from either myself or not. Thank you, Chair.
We will then finalize the introduction of our staff members. We'll start with our secretary.
Thanks again, Chairperson. The name is Nolan Jokotuanasa, Community Ministry, City and Public Works.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Minister, Honourable Deputy Minister, my name is Shuri Benazin. I'm the Conference Advisor to the Committee.
Good morning. My name is Jane Stacey. I'm the Research and Portfolio Committee on Public
Works. We will then give the Minister, we are on the introductions, so we don't know whether I will start by the end of the introduction.
Jeremy Cronin, good morning. Deputy
Commissioner.
Good morning, Jeffrey Mahachi, Acting Chair, Deputy Admiral of Africa.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Joe Odiambo, CEO, Country of South
Africa. I am Mr. Omar Sheo, Senior Manager, Communications at the IDG. Good morning, Minister. Good morning, Minister.
Como head of the body, my name is Zulis Pukula. I'm the head of the CEO's office in IT.
Good morning. My name is Steven Sabeni. I'm the acting executive in charge of programs at IDT.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Christopher Marauti. I'm the general manager responsible for social media.
Good morning, everybody. My name is
Hanani Kruger.
I'm the acting
CEO
for IDT.
Good morning, Professor Kokana, CEO of IDT.
Good morning, no, Bula Bakuru, the board member.
Good morning. Good morning, my name is Manisa, I'm the board member.
Thank you very much,
thank you
from the office of the Minister of Public Works.
Good morning, my name is Tando, my name is Buwabata from the Ministry of Public Works.
Good morning, Chair, members of the Minister, Father of the Ministry.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable members of Parliament, Minister and Deputy Minister, and colleagues. My name is Abucha Matuke from the DDG responsible for Intergovernmental Relations.
Good morning. My name is Malatelo Mwasa, Chief Director of Intergovernmental Relations.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson,
Mr.
Deputy
Minister
and Member,
Yonzo Slaver
from the Office of the Auditor General.
Good morning. My name is Abela Shobewa from the Auditor
General. Thank you, Chair. Good morning, all. My name is Daniel Panada from the Office of the Auditor General.
Good morning, my name is Batemo Vitova, I'm with PNG.
Okay, thank
you very much. We hope everybody is now known. We'll hand over to the Minister.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe using your analogy of the father and the mother, and the relative for children, and the father and the mother are responsible for them when they are up to 18, after that, children are independent, they command for themselves. Because legally they are adults. But I think it raises a question of all of us have to be accountable. From minister, deputy minister, DG, and entities, the boards. All themselves, the CEOs and the staff, everybody has to be accountable. Starting with the IDT chairperson, this has been a very difficult year for the IDT. And I think it's reflected already in the audit outcomes, ending with the disclaimer finding. In fact, when I come this morning, I feel like I'm in grade 12. With that lady at the end, Mandy, I was acting DG at the time of Public Works. And very interesting, when he was acting DG, people didn't want him in the department. They wanted their own person. They were writing all sorts of things about him. But we steered the ship. We're not whatever happened. And I feel therefore today we are right at that beginning. when I addressed the portfolio committee in April, chairperson and members, I warned of the governing challenges facing the IDT. In 2017, the highly respected chair and deputy chair of IDT, Professor Somato Shafiki, and Nomvula Rakoloti, were removed. Coincidentally, Nomvula Rakoloti is the board member again. She is number two seated, and she was deputy chair when they were removed. In fact, they were the last members to join that board. And I guess then, with the my predecessor, when he was dealing with the board, I think decided to say last out first. I mean, last in first out. After my reappointment in February, I became increasingly concerned about the growing media report alleging corruption, which had been uncovered in the various forensic reports undertaken by the National Treasury. And it transpired under the new leadership that the board had nothing to implement the limited elections which were recommended in the forensic report. Moreover, when that CEO tried to implement, he was suspended by the chair without a mandate from the board. Meanwhile, little had been done to develop a new sustainable business case and plan for IDT. But I want to remind the members, IDT was formed by President Kichere and had been given the 2 billion. Which year was it? 1990. And they've been using that money all along. When that money got finished, they were living like escort on bailout from treasure, year in, year out. Even before this CEO arrived, by the way. And then when I demanded explanations from the board, after I come back, forcing the board to account, they were not ready. And when I demanded more, and when I challenged them in terms of their fiduciary duty, they were not cooperating. I decided to remove them. And the board.
But what happened, instead of us focusing on the organization, were running in courts. They were using the same resources of the IDT to challenge me, my decision in court. But at the end, they were clobbered, which was a wastage of resources in the court process, instead of focusing on the issues. But Chair, we must also understand that the IDT's client base continued to shrink due to the quality of work, and in some cases, none delivered. And in trying to rebuild trust and prepare the ground for the appointment of a permanent board, I consulted with the ministers, three ministers, basic education and health, who are the IDT's main clients, and invited them to nominate members in the board. I also went to the treasury to do the same thing. I also wanted to invite the Minister of Justice and Corrections because they are, I think, the third biggest client. Because the idea is to say they must have a line of sight. But in the process, we are being delayed by the Master to finalize within the board. The intention is to say his major department must have a line of sight and sit in the board and see what is happening with their project, so that they can be able to ask questions quickly, because we don't need to sit on the history. They will be talking about
the issues and accounting on what happened to this and that. So what was the situation at the end of April? Where are we today? I mean, that was the situation at the end of April. The CEO has been reinstated now after he was out for, I don't know whether it's 9 months. But I remember before he left and even before I was changed to sport, we were only moving around the property, talking to the premier, talking to the MEC, and they were starting to be saying, now, okay, we are very clear about where we're going and so on. I don't know where that process ended. Because my worry was the shrinking of the client base, especially the property. So now he's been reinstated, we have the interim board. They are working towards making sure that it has to be confirmed and then. But there are other bigger debates, which are the debates being taken within the context of what is happening in the parastatal. The IDG is not alone. There are other parastatals which are not performing. There are other parastatals which are not in the red. You know what is happening with ESCOM. You see what is happening in Transnet. You see what is happening in a number of parastatals. But IDG belongs to those who are in the red, including me, where they are still a threat. You know that in Parliament we've always been discussing the bailouts of ESCOM and so on. Maybe quickly check, just moving forward. And I've requested the National Treasury to provide expertise to conduct what I call a rapid diagnosis to map out a sustainable business model and options for the IDG going forward. And I'm putting it here, these big boards would tend to be uncontrollable. It's something we have to look at. Not just the public way, but I think as government as a whole and also as parliament. Because they just become big monsters. You know, boards fighting with ministers going into, and the minister being the main shareholder, by the way. It's a very serious matter. Because people tend to think that they're just on their own, they are in their own business. And there's a lot of corruption. Wherever they attend us, there's a lot of corruption. The forensic audits were meant to expose that corruption and to deal with people. Very interesting. The CEO had suspended people who were implicated. Instead, when the new guys came, they suspended him and brought back those guys. So, the issue of a sustainable model and options going forward. It's a very critically important because the IDG has an important role to play in the delivery of the social infrastructure for the indigenous communities. And I want you, Jefferson, to analyze that. Whatever the problems of the IDG, you must meet us to fix those problems, but if you close the IDG, you would have compromised the social infrastructure. Because schools, clinics, community halls and so on have been depending on the ICT. But we must not really look at the model. Not a big headed ICT, a very technical ICT. The last year's disrupted area attempts to turn around the fortunes of the ICT. And it's critical that they get back on track to focus on service delivery to the client, collect outstanding money that are owed to them, which are currently standing at 12 million. You'll hear when the CEO presents and what we are also seeing on the paper. We're being owed 12 million. We can't deal with our own debts, sometimes the salaries. But we're owed by the department, by the way. Department said, in particular the provinces, where we've been doing the work. But they will clarify that. there's a matter of some unfinished business. The National Treasury Foreign Report and recommendations which were never implemented. The Department GRC, which is the branch government risk and compliance, is competent to oversee the process. It has had a lot of practice with the investigation in the last years. And I've said to the CEO with the interim board, my apologies, I'm not supposed to be screaming at you, switch it off. So long. And then I've said to the CEO, talk to your interim board, implement the forensic audit. Implement it now, you're back. And most important, Chairperson, as I close, you will see from the IT presentation to the portfolio committee that the entity is working with the office of the AG to implement the plan to address the adverse audit findings. I know that the area of focus is going to be this financial sustainability of the IGT, implementation of the forensic audit, the recovery of the money owed to the IGT, the tasking immediate analysis and recommendation. And of course, from my side, I must move beyond the issue of the interim board. But that is dependent on the options which was still discussing with the Treasury and the government as a whole. That's why we're not rushing the issue of a permanent board. I want to say, Chairperson, as I hand over the mic to you, whether we were there or not there, but we'll come to account, we are going to accept the criticism. That's what succession is all about. The good and the bad, you have to own them. They are yours now. You can't say I was not there. But the key is how to move forward and correct the wrongs. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister. I hope nobody is around. Then I'm going to the DDG. The acting DDG, before we give IT.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Minister and Deputy Minister, Members present. Chairperson, today I would actually not present like we normally do, like I did yesterday when I opened the discussion, because the Minister has covered most of the areas. So I'll save the committee time actually. Because of the chairperson of the objective committee of the members of the executive government to take your own remark.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think the comment that I would make from my side is to say that we have taken note of the outcomes of the audit, the disclaimer, and the three critical matters that arose from that. But I also want to indicate that as the CEO will be making the presentation, is that as an interim board, we've already worked on a structure and a turnaround strategy. Maybe at this time, what I would like to highlight is that one of our challenges is the technical capacity within IDT. So what we have done is that through the process that
Salo, the mic must be closer so that it can be recorded. Yeah, it must be closer. We are recording.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. And then we'll Salo. I'm just a member of Salo, which is not present today. Okay, I think also just as I continue is to say that we have looked at the three critical matters that the CEO will be sharing that has led to the disclaimer as well. But we have an action plan as well on how we will go forward. But maybe, just as part of remarks from the board, what I would like to highlight is that one of the challenges that we are facing is the issues of technical capacity. but I would like to share to indicate that there is a strategy going forward when it comes to building technical capacity within the IDT that has been taken care of in terms of our organizational development exercise that we just had. The analysis that we've made, we've seen that in terms of the professionals that we have, I think we have 44, of which 12 are professionals and the rest are candidates. And what we have done in the interim, one of our system councils also within Public Works, the Council for the Built Environment, is that we've got 17 of our candidates that were taken for a structured program, of which to date one has upgraded to be a professional. So that is work in progress, quite encouraging. And as part of building financial sustainability, one of the plans is to come up with a BEPS, what we call the Built Environment Professional Service, which of course would need certain funding. But we have already started to phase it in with the professionals that we have within the department. And as part of the turnaround strategy, the plans are quite at an advanced stage in terms of the implementation, but what we are first going to do is to start with the professionals that we have to become part of that unit when it comes to building technical capacity. We are still in the process of finalizing the implementation of the organizational development exercise, which is specifically looking at issues of capacity, where, as the minister has indicated, to say that one of the plans is to move towards a more technical IDT. So some of that has already been factored in terms of the organizational development exercise that we have, that we are in the process of completing. I think I will end there.
We'll then give over to the CEO, Mr. Kazaga Parate.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning. Morning to the Honourable, morning to colleagues, morning Minister, Deputy Minister. Chair, let me just indicate that I woke up with a terrible stomach bug, and I asked Mzo to whisper to you that if that time comes, I will just, with your indulgence, ask for a small break, but I hope it won't come. Despite my sickness, Chair, I managed to be here to account. What I'm going to do, with your indulgence again, honorable members, I want to make sure this presentation flows nicely and makes sense to you. If you find me not following slides in the chronology they are in, I am going to indicate to you where I'm going and cite the specific slides that I'm going to deal with. I'm mindful of time, and that Akrima is also going to present, but I think I will not do justice if I don't put emphasis on some of the issues, especially expanding on what the Minister has already indicated. I will move straight to the purpose of the presentation. Obviously, these are annual report hearings. We hear to account to Parliament on the performance over the reporting period, which is for the financial year 2017-2018. This report is against the targets that were set in the annual performance plans that we tabled in Parliament. We will deal with both the performance outcomes as well as the financial related outcomes. Let me then say that I will just first deal with the conceptual background. And from there, I want to move straight to deal with the matters that have been raised by the Auditor General. I'm very pleased that I see they are here. Just also outline what are the plans. Perhaps I will just indicate as well progress, because maybe it might not be understood that the fact that there is another disclaimer, there hasn't been any progress being done in the previous years. I will just outline those issues, and then I will come back and talk to the performance targets. In that regard, I may also ask my colleague, the head of strategy, because from a purpose of institutional memory, I may have some little bit of gaps. I tried hard to catch up on a number of things, but where there are specific matters, it will be much better place to just zoom into that. But I will take over again and run through the performance on finances, where I might need just some information here and there from the acting CFO who I will ask to assist me. But in the main chair, I think 90% of this presentation I will handle myself. Chairperson and honourable members, in terms of the conceptual background, I think I'm not going to say much on the next slide. It is about IDT. I think the Minister has given a very nice background of where IDT comes from and the evolution of IDT over the last two decades. Where we are currently, we focusing more on the social infrastructure program management services. That is our main source of business generation. And we charge a management fee, and that management fee is the only revenue that sustains our operation. Minister has also indicated that in recent times there have been challenges that have impacted on our business quite significantly, leading to the decline in the business portfolio, obviously also affected our revenue streams. We have taken a resolve that we have to turn around the situation, deal with those operational challenges as well as financial management challenges so that we do not continuously rely on bailouts from the National Treasury. If we move to the next slide, I just want to give this model. It actually indicates where we located as ICT in the bigger scheme of things. I'm not going to spend time, safe to say that government as a shareholder has delegated constitutional responsibility to manage public assets to public works, and then we are an entity under public works. We consult with public works in the performance of our work. However, we deliver services directly to our client departments, which are at a national and provincial level of government. We do have very small work we're currently doing with local government, but we are earmarking that CM in order to find the space and assist. In our strategy, we actually looking at various opportunities that are available in the local sphere. I will talk to that in the next slide. Chair, I think what is important in the middle block there, this is just the summary of the value chain. We provide program management services through FNA or agreements that we find with various client departments. Starting with project initiation, planning, development of design, and also procuring various service providers, both for professional consulting as well as construction. After that, we then get going in terms of project management and actual execution of construction. Chair, what is important is that in the current situation, we have enormous challenges due to capacity constraints at a technical level. We also have challenges that are systemic within our operation. If you look at our design, operational design, organizational design, and the entire organizational architecture, it is based on the very much old legacy system. We are now currently re-looking at both our web processes, workflow, as well as our IT systems. I'm going to come back to this because it's very, very important. But another element is the people element. We are looking at reconfiguring and repositioning ICT so that it has got built environment skills in the main. supported by obviously various support services, but in terms of core and non-core, we want to turn around the ratio. Currently we've got more non-core people than core. Hence we had to embark on the organizational design and organizational development process. Chairperson, this process is already unfolding and we have made progress. But I will come back again to say where are the challenges that we need to address together with the shareholder, because we have identified challenges. But maybe I can just simply indicate that the challenges are largely result related, because there are certain investments that we need to do in order to move forward. Chair, in the next slide, you will then let me, I think the members have the copy, because I don't think you may be able to see this. On the left hand side, I've just summarized what are the current conceptual issues that we are dealing with. I must also emphasize, Chair, that the IDT for a very long time has been talking about transformation. And in the past, I know that there has been allocations of funds that were earmarked assisting this process, but it has never really took off the ground. We are more than confident that this time around we have embarked on this process in earnest, because we have now started with the OG, we have now reconfigured our structures, we are now in the process of implementing the new organizational structure and also looking at retraining of our employees, but also recruiting the right skills. We're hoping that if we deal with these fundamental processes, Chair, we will be able to nip in the bud the problems that ICT is facing. Now, part of the internal structural problems relate to internal operations. Whether you're talking supply chain, because we are responsible for construction procurement for the entire government when it comes to social infrastructure, to the value of almost 6 billion rand, and that requires systems that are responsive. So we are focusing on digitizing our internal systems. We're also looking at integrating our current financial management system with the project management system, so that we've got a seamless process of managing our business. We're also looking at improving on the M&E. In the new structure, we have identified corporate monitoring and evaluation at the head office level, but we've decentralized most of the M&E where the work will be happening. Chair, safe to say the turnaround strategy focuses on three main pillars. And it is important because these three main pillars are what we believe if we do this. This is what we need to do in order to make IDT sustainable, financially viable, and profitable in the long run. We do have short-term focus because currently we are struggling with cash flow challenges, as the Minister indicated. This relates to ensuring that we mobilize additional portfolio in the short term. I'm happy that the Minister correctly indicated that we had roadshows last year. Some are beginning to pay dividends. Just last week, we received a portfolio worth about 1 billion from the POPO through the Department of Education. We are also visiting three more provinces recently, Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, KZN, and Northwest. And we are confident that with the value proposition that we are putting forward, we will be able to get something from those initiatives. The other area, Chair, we are focusing more on improving our immediate cash flow, which is focusing on collecting what is due to us now. The debt collection has been a big problem. I think AG did raise this in their report as well, that revenue collection needs to be one of our priorities. I've taken liberty to contact my colleagues, all accounting officers in various departments, including provinces, all the HODs that are owing us. And I also had a very fruitful engagement with the National Treasury DG to look into how they can come about and assist us with the collection of these monies that are due to us. We have put our plans in place so that we can ensure that we are able as an organization to meet our immediate obligations. Whether you're talking paying salaries to our officials or you're talking paying suppliers that we owe, but those immediate obligations we want to continue to meet. We have agreed on a plan that, amongst others, will ensure their intervention, direct intervention with those departments. Chair, I must indicate, though, to the committee members that there are, in my view, two sources of the problem, which in the left light I will also indicate where IDD might be able to come in. When it comes to CAPEX or capital budget, I think there has been poor planning across the board, especially integrated planning between the infrastructure planning and budgeting. Most of the multi-year projects, you find that there are annual plans in terms of budgeting, but those projects have a cumulative effect in terms of cash flow. So by the time financial year starts, you find many departments have huge accruals that are owing from work carried over from previous years. And they get a lot of pressure in terms of their own cash flow for the new year. And sometimes I think they do have to resort to rationing how they pay suppliers. We have experienced this in some of the big provinces that we work with. Some have improved. In fact, when I was in Limpopo, I was very impressed because I had an engagement with the HOC Education and I find that they have made a proper plan in order to address the issue of overcommitment. But some provinces are seriously challenged, especially in KZN and Northern Cape. I find that there is a serious problem with their cash flows. So I don't think we are the only one at ITT, but we are pushing for our own revenue to come in, because Chair, we do not have a luxury of getting money appropriated here in Parliament. We have to rely on those money to receive. So for us, they have to be paid. Otherwise, ITT will have to shut its doors. That's simple as all that, Chair. So our three areas of focus, Chair, will be on looking at improved revenue management initiatives. Secondly, we are looking at increased market share. When you talk of increased market share, I indicated earlier that we are looking at those areas within government that we have not been working with those particular departments, as well as local governments here. We are exploring our opportunities there. For an example, I can give an example. There's an opportunity with the infrastructure backlog with local government. There have been initiatives to go and assist, and we believe that we can play a very, very useful role there. Chairman, one of the important focus areas that we want also to touch on is on the infrastructure planning. We are, in our new strategy, looking at developing a GIS mapping system, because we work and we are very much aware of what's happening on the ground. We are looking at assisting in integrated infrastructure planning, and we will be working directly in each and every province. There are provinces already, I can give an example of Limpopo again, where we are part and parcel of the structures that are already in place, including the technical committees as well as the social cluster for infrastructure, as well as even at EPSCO level, we are assisting, working closely with public works. So we are going to replicate this in most of the regions so that we are able to assist in that regard. The other areas which I think
we have done it right this time. Minister mentioned the issue of built environment expertise. We call it BEP, Built Environment Professional Services. We think we can not only turn around IDT to be a high performance entity, but we will also generate additional resources for ourselves. Because currently we have outsourced this work. We appoint these people from external and they have not been really assisting as much because they need a lot of monitoring still. So what we want to do is to develop this in-house capacity so that we can do the work on our own. Thank you, Chair. I won't take much on the next slide because I've already touched on these issues. Basically, this is the new proposed value chain where we will focus on infrastructure planning and infrastructure procurement, built environment professional services, but also continue doing our program management. The focus really on program management is to make sure that we improve on quality, improve on cost, and also on time frame. We have had our lessons, Chair, and I think in the recent times we have had trouble. I think Honourable members remember the troubles with certain high courts that we were building. We managed to build two new magistrate courts not far away from here in Pleasanton Bay and the other one in Boynton, and we really did those in record time, and we delivered them within cost and also within the acceptable time frame, and we think we are proud of that. Chair, the initiative that we have put in place, maybe I must indicate that the turnaround plan was revised and submitted to the ministry in November last year, 2017. And it actually touched on this new operating model that I've just summarized. The key component of that is the OD exercise, organizational development process. Organizational development process, in simple terms, is looking at the reorganization and the restructuring, where we look at the new business model and the new strategic thinking and say how then do we develop the internal processes to be aligned to that new strategy as well as the organizational structure and the people that we need in order to be appointed in that structure. So the skills mix is quite important. We did a skills audit and identify that there's a lot of people that are not adding value in terms of the new strategy. So those people have taken voluntary severance packages. There were hiccups, we don't want to say because there are keeping progress in these processes. There are a few officials who are challenging some of the outcome, but in general, the process is in line with Section 189, where we have not completely followed Section 189 requirements of the LRA. We are busy now trying to correct that. The next slide, maybe I should just take a pause and bring a five here, because it talks to the initial overview given by the minister. We have experienced quite a challenging year, Chair. This may not necessarily be seen at face value as having huge implications, but from a governance and leadership perspective, Chair, it has got enormous implications. The IDT board, as required by King for corporate governance, is responsible for driving the strategy and providing leadership. And the previous board took serious consideration and of this responsibility. And there was a particular focus on effective leadership as well as what generally is referred to as ethical leadership. And there was a priority that we as management must develop an ethical culture with the organization that will speak to the responsibility that we are given by government. There were therefore policies that we put in place that speak to issues of zero tolerance, for instance, on corruption, because one of the biggest issues we're dealing with was issues of corruption. So when we were in that process, we started this restructuring process as well. So we were pushing this thing, Chair, at the same time. The changes that took place at the board level, as indicated by the minister, was then chairperson and deputy were removed. There was a ripple effect after that, because that was around July. And immediately after that, we had new members coming in, and there was a little bit of very, very, very stressful situation within the organization. I'm saying this because I was the CEO at the time. I engaged a lot of executives, but I lost one executive in August who was core in managing the infrastructure program. And then in September, there was already indications of trouble, and then I also had to be put on suspension in the beginning of October, and I've been away for almost 9 months. Because the High Court found that the processes that were followed were unlawful and they were flawed. And then immediately after that, the person who was driving the turnaround of finances, the CFO, was also pressurized to resign and left the organization in December. And early in the year, after just about at the same time with the reshuffle of cabinet, then another executive was also given retrenchment orders, and all the executives, the managers in the CEO office. So the effect of this, I'm raising this because the effect of this is really enormous on the operation of the organization. Currently, I'm the only executive that is available at IBT. The rest are senior manager that are on acting capacity. I think chairperson that needed to be given context. Then if I move, Chair, with your permission, I want to take you to slide number 37. Right. I want to talk to, because these are important issues. I'm not underscoring the next issues around performance and financial management. Okay. But for me, the organization, in order to be sustainable, first we should deal with the fundamental challenges as outlined by the Auditor General. But where it says audit outcomes, that should be where we're going. Maybe to give you the background, IDT business model is based on, as I indicated, charging a management fee on program expenditure.
If, for instance, we get a program of 100 million and then we charge a 10% for argument sake management fee, so our income would be 10 million, which would be 10% of that 100 million. So if that 10 million is paid to us, it will reflect on our revenue in full as 10 million and into our bank account. If that 10 million is not fully paid, say half of that is paid, then 5 million will reflect on our revenue, sorry, 10 million in full, but 5 million will reflect in our bank account and another 5 on what we call debtors, monies that are receivable to us. I will talk to debtors later. I'm clarifying this because one of the most important things about ICT financial report is that that figure called program expenditure has to be accurate. Because if it's not accurate, then there are a number of other figures that get affected. Your bank account might be questionable, your revenue, your debtors, and so forth. So hence, the AG, when they analyze the financials, they will look at whether this matter is material, if it's material, and they also look whether it is pervasive. Pervasive means how many other elements in the financial statements are affected by that misstatement. So with ICT, it is very, very easy to slip between clean audit and disclaimer. It's very, very easy due to that alone. Now let me come to the issue at hand. The members will recall that in the past we presented to this committee, 2014-15 we had our first disclaimer, and 2015-16, those 2 years, the issues that were bothering ITT that led to a disclaimer were generally historical issues that were big issues relating to program expenditure. Program expenditure, which is money received from various departments, were never reconciled until such time that those figures or those amounts were required to be included in the financial statements of ICT for the first time in 2015. So we reconciled those figures back to early years of ICT, which was around 2005. In fact, in some instances, we went back to 2002. And that exercise was hectic, and it required us to get additional resources. We even appointed consultants from outside to come and assist, and that was done and cleared. Now, what we're talking about here is a matter that arose in the previous financial year for the first time, that is in 2016-17. Which related to invoices that were processed by ICT against the program expenditure. Invoices from both contractors as well as invoices from professional service providers, that is consultants. What then happened was, because of late payments of invoices by departments, sometimes consultants or contractors themselves will not submit an invoice until they hear that the department has transferred the money, and only then issue the invoice. Sometimes that invoice that is issued is for work that was done 6 months ago. So if that is the case, we were supposed to record that invoice by adjusting the opening balances because it referred to previous years. But however, because it was paid in this year, it was captured in the current financial year and reflected on the expenditure of the current financial year, then it distorted the figures in terms of the principle of cutoff. Because the accounting standard says you must record expenditure and income to the relevant period it refers to. So that is what was the problem. So that we understand the problem of the disclaimer fundamentally is the fact that those invoices were not properly recorded in terms of each financial year. There were some invoices picked up by the AG in the sample that they did that
should have been recorded in the previous year. Now, if you're looking at program expenditure of 4.3 billion, it is easy therefore for the AG to quantify that amount and becomes material when you extrapolate that amount. If the error rate is to understand that it is material, then the AG would like you to go back and correct the entire population if you have to get an unqualified audit. Now in this instance, there are also time constraints to finish the audit as well as to go back and start reconciling all the invoices that were captured for the whole year starting from April. So that is the serious challenge with IDT. So IDT has no choice but to capture those invoices correctly for the first time. So the issue of internal control is very, very critical. The second issue, which actually is new in this year, that has been raised by the AG, is that the late payment of invoices attracts interest payment in it. And that interest payment must be recorded separately instead of being included in the expenditure. If you record it separately, we are able to identify it as fruitless expenditure. But if it's included in program expenditure, it is then convoluting the figure of the program expenditure. And then also it will probably then affect your revenue because your revenue is based on percentage of expenditure. So it goes back to what I was saying, that if that expenditure is not correct, then there are other accounts that get affected. And because of the nature of the business of IDT, by the way, Chair, probably we are the only implementing agent that is raising this billing in this method. Hence, we are working in the turnaround plan to relook at the billing system so that we address the problem once and for all. So that our billing will be based, like professional fee, on progress and completion or stage of completion of projects instead of relying on program stage. It sounds very technical, but it is important that we as an organization, and we take responsibility for that, that we make sure that the application of the accounting standard that is talking to revenue recognition and expenditure recognition is done in a proper way. That is, Chairperson, the important thing. The third and last issue, Chair, is another new matter that has come up which relates to the controls that were identified as weak in the non-state sector EPWP program. This is a more broader challenge for government because we implement this program widely across the land with non-profit organization. Fortunately, in our case, we are not implementing with municipalities, but I know municipalities in the broader EPWP program play a significant role. So we find that the NPOs, there were cases that were reported even in the hotline of fraudulent transactions that were suspected, and we investigated that, and we found some of these questions raised by members of the party to have merit. What there are two cases that I can cite. What usually happens is that the NPO will submit a claim to the IDT and indicate the number of beneficiaries that are participating in the EPWP NSS program. And when you look at the document, you find all the signatures in place and so forth. And then the whistleblower said, no, actually those signatures are false. It's not actually us who have signed them. We have not received that payment. So the way to catch them is probably to do surprise visits at certain times when they are doing payments, but also make sure that our own officials do regular monitoring and auditing of those books. It is a labor-intensive exercise, but it is the only way of catching such kind of malfeasance. So that's what happened, Chair. And in our engagement with the AG, we understood the AG to say, look, if we're looking at the amount of 583 million for for this program. We cannot rely on this figure because there might be a number of cases that are not reported, and if we quantify that, it could give us an amount that is quite material. So they could not express, therefore, an opinion in that regard. So, Chair, I'm going to move to the slide. I'm not going to go to other slides because I've really taken you through this. I'm going to go straight to slide 43 on the root cause. Number 42 or 43, depending on the print that you have.
It's a
cut-off problem. The first bullet there says the inability to reliably estimate the stage of completion as of 31st March due to insufficient technical input on project. I have already indicated this one in detail. This is the cut-off problem, but last year we had problem with contractors as well as KSPs. Contractors, the AG was happy that the action plan that was put in place has addressed those invoices. Now the remaining problem is the professional service providers. They also need to implement exactly the same kind of approach we ask the contractors to implement. The contractors responded very well. They have identified work because they needed to split the work in the two financial years so that we can pick it up easily on the invoice. So PSPs, we also had meetings with them and also sent communication around it, but we still experiencing problems with them in terms of how they do their business. CFO will add if I'm missing anything. The issue of monitoring attendance register for NPOs I just indicated, and also the lack of monitoring by IDT officials on the NPOs. This also leads to the capacity issues, and in our turnaround we've identified the need to increase capacity. In fact, some of the people we want to move, who we might ordinarily regard as redundant, we are intending to if the capacity under the EPWP rather than laying them off. So we are looking at options instead of making sure that people are out of the job, because we can retrain them easily to begin to do social facilitation but also to assist with the monitoring of the NPOs. Level standard operating procedures, this matter is a matter that we are working with the department on so that we make sure that we have enhanced our internal processes when it comes to the EPWP. Chair, the left slide is continuing with the root causes. Lack of capacity to implement improved and additional monitoring and evaluation processes. I've cited our initiatives to improve on the systems of monitoring. Lack of adequate systems and procedures to identify relevant construction-related payments. I've spoken to that. Lack of integrated project management system. Chairperson, this one is one of the major concerns for us. We have developed a proposal and specification for a new project management system. I've engaged this matter as well, Minister, when I met with the DG, because we have costed this and we require plus minus 57 million just to get a proper project management system that will ensure that all our projects are managed and monitored in a proper way. Because currently the manual processes that Mr. Zandini and his people are using are very problematic, especially given the amount of transactions that we deal with and the value of those transactions. The impact on organizational development processes, we also engage in detail, Chair and Honourable Members, on our migration plan on the OT. We have identified the new positions that we need. We have costed our plan thoroughly, we will be submitting this proposal to the department as well soon, so that we can discuss how we then move forward. Because the strategy that we have now, we are very much happy that chair, it will address our problems. However, it's just going to mean that we invest money into it. And you know, IDT has got cash flow challenges currently, so we are engaging both the department and treasury around how we move forward. Chair and honourable members, the next slide talks to the measures in their entirety of addressing the challenges that we have. The first one is to enforce the practice of monthly project certificates for PSPs as with the contractors. I must say, it sounds very much operational issues. I've just highlighted the challenge and what we do at a more strategic level. But in order to address the root causes of the audit, unfortunately, these are the basic operational issues that we need to deal with. Make sure that the monthly project reconciliation, monthly project certificates that are being checked, implement manual control measures to identify PSP payments, review 6 months of the current financial year for misstatements, review value chain of the NSS program, request funding for increased M&E, I've indicated that, do a bit of research on the biometric system. We will look into this, but in terms of the immediate action, I just want to say that we may not necessarily have the resources to spend money on digitized systems, but we just want to make sure that the NPOs comply with the basics required to control the spending. Like as I said in the last bullet, we say the mandatory financial reconciliations that are done on a monthly and regular basis. The last slide under this part just also expand on some of the interventions. And they are quite detailed, Chair, in the terms of the actions. I'm not sure whether I must go into each, like implementing register of separate interests, because these are addressing what I said earlier, that we must be able to split interests and so forth. But I think members can read this, they just indicate the details in terms of the action plan. Chair, I was personally involved. I met with all the regions and the acting CFO, and I actually addressed myself personally in the workshop that we were looking at the development of the audit action plan. I am quite comfortable that this audit action plan will work for this financial year. I also feel happy because I invited the AG just to explain the findings in more specific detail, and we asked questions about what the expectations are so that we are not out of line in terms of the interventions. And they were very responsive. They came, they took us through in detail in terms of what the issues they've raised are about and how they expect us to, the minimum that we need to do in order at least to get out of the trouble that we are in. Chair, I will then move a little bit back to slide number 21. Sorry, did I say 21 maybe earlier? Slide number performance report. Slide number 11. Slide number 11. Slide number 11, Chair, then it's going to take us to the performance report. With the challenges that we have, the performance is just about 50%
which is informed by the constraints of not being able to realize all the budget that we thought we would realize this year. We will indicate the shortfall as well when it comes to finances of how much was realized on the revenue side compared to what we budgeted for in the APP. So there is a correlation between what we finally get as income compared to what our plans were based on. If we based our plans on getting 400 million and we end up getting only 300, then it has significant implications on the target. But Chair, with your permission, as I just said up a bit, our head of strategy can start on the performance and I will take over when I come back.
Let's hear the head of strategy. Must also have strategy for not realizing what you wanted to realize, so that you don't die if you don't get what you hope to get. Must fight to get what you want to get. Must not depend on God.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, honorable member, colleague. And everyone else that I haven't today. I would focus on about five or six slides because I think what the CEO has done has been to give a very detailed account of how we performed as an organization, what the results are, the reasons why certain targets have not been met. So I'll start with this is slide 12 for me on my. So this is just talk about the prophetic goals and what the kind of things that we contribute to, how we are structured. We have two programs. Program one, which is integrated service delivery, which is the core program of the IDT, and the strategic goal basically is the drive of the IDT, through which we seek to contribute to the state capacity, the capacity of the state to deliver and implement its development program effectively. And linked to that are a number of strategic goals on how we are going to deliver on that particular mission or on that bigger, greater government goal. And program two is administration, which is the basis on which that performance, that the goal as program as it's detailed under program one is able to be delivered. So with that as a background, I would like us to move to the next slide, which is the one that talks about performance. So on performance, I would like to just acknowledge a slight error that we made on the below program spend. The actual expenditure is 4.313 billion. That figure has to be adjusted, but everything else is correct in terms of the achievement, the percentage achievement and everything. So that first one, as you'll see in the financials, 4.313, not 4.177. This was the prior figure before which had to be adjusted after the audit. So that is just an error on our side to not have included that. Okay. So in terms of our performance, the CEO has already mentioned that we met about 50% of our target, and there are problem areas. The ones that are marked in red on the column to the far right. You'll notice that the program on the issue about value of youth spent on youth women, we're targeted to spend about 15% of program spent on youth. That has not been realized, mainly because there are very few young people or companies that are owned by young people who are in the construction industry who are able to bid or to provide bids, to submit bids that are of good enough quality for us to be able to realize that expenditure target. The second one is on the CDP as well, the little program spent on, so that also goes to women. There's also the big one issue around the contractor development program, which didn't run at all during the financial year, that is the 2017-18 financial year. And the reason for that was that the call for new participants in the program, when the first phase ran and it was meant to take off, the second one was meant to take off 2017-18, the call for new participants had a few errors that it had to be withdrawn, so that we send out a call which is correct in terms of specifications. Because if we had gone out and gone out with it and got persistence with those errors, it would have resulted in an early finding of irregular expenditure. So the call, the new advert will go out, I think, in the next 2 weeks, which is this quarter. So a new team has been appointed to work on the specs to make sure that they comply with their right specs. So in the next 2 weeks, we will send out a call, and the program will actually be implemented, hopefully, by the end of the current financial year. So that is it with program one. If honorable members would allow me, I will skip this slide because it simply shows expenditure over the years. And the next slide, which is 17 on my side, I guess it's 17 left side or 16, focuses on expenditure by portfolio. You'll realize that a bulk of our expenditure for our portfolio goes to education facilities, which is about 61%, followed by NSS, EPWT, non-state sector, which is 16%, and then justice, which is 12%. So these are the costs that the CEO spoke about earlier. I would like to move now to the next objective, strategic objective two, which is program two, administration. You'll realize that we have sought to have unqualified audit opinion on both on performance information and on financials. That didn't happen, and that is why we have a variance. We have achieved zero in that respect. Another problem that we have is with respect to the average number of days to effect payment from the date of receiving invoices. We, at the moment, or during the reporting period, we could only process 50% of our invoices within the 30-day period. My colleague, the CFO, will elaborate a bit on that, on the specific reasons. And this relates, obviously, to the issues that the CEO spoke about when he spoke about audit outcomes. So you'll see that under the strategy, we talk about the previous year's disclaimer related to the first two targets there, and on that issues around second balances, the reconciliation of program expenditure, accrual management, and everything. So that the CEO has already spoken about extensively during his deliberation on the process of audit outcomes that are negative. So these are some of the targets that we met. Probably on risk and compliance management. I wouldn't dwell on those on areas where performance was quite outstanding, because I think it's quite clear. So we have done reasonably well as well in terms of the registration of professionals as built environment professionals. I think we have about 90% of them. We set base targets for 90% of them to be registered as professionals. You may have heard the CEO talking about the audit process, which affected the occupancy level in the entity. We have sought to have keep the occupancy level at 90%, 92% or lower, but we only the occupancy level by the end of the financial year was only 69%. So this had to do with the OD process and the resultant moratorium as well on the recruitment of new staff. So we're doing reasonably well in terms of targets around corporate efficiency ratio, in terms of corporate budget savings, as well as around issues around communication strategy. However, with respect to the stakeholder management strategy, that target was not met, but the stakeholder management commission, the stakeholder management strategy is now part of the communication strategy. And during the reporting period, the manager for stakeholder management left the organization during the OD process. So he was not able to complete the task because he had to leave. He was one of the people who had to leave following the implementation of the organizational development process. But his job has now been delegated to first of communication, the other part to the regional managers in the organization. So that will definitely be met in the current financial year. So that is just an indication of overall performance, the 50% of targets that we met, the 12 out of 24. The total number of targets we have is 24, which is reflected there at the bottom. So we met only half of that, which is 12. And the other 5 were just partially achieved, so while the rest were not achieved at all. So that, in a nutshell, summarizes our non-financial performance. And I will hand over back to the CEO. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me quickly run through the financial report. I'm mindful of time. I'm just not going to get into the actual financial unless there are specific questions that you have later. We'll deal with that. Same to indicate that our program expenditure indicated earlier was 4.3 billion and we had a planned budget of 6.8 billion. Now, there have been a number of factors that affected the spending. I think the portfolio decline was enormous in terms of the targeted portfolio vis-à-vis what we actually got from the department, because when we tabled the APP, we made an estimate of what is likely to happen. I did raise this with the committee in previous year, and as I was indicating earlier, we just received a portfolio worth of 1 billion now, and definitely we have engaged also with the client that you are not going to spend. They are not necessarily transferring the money to us now, it's just the allocation, but we have agreed how much of that you can spend by the end of the year. We also then had a shortfall in the total management fees from the target, a decline of 7.93% compared to previous year. As indicated, the downturn is linked directly to expenditure. Perhaps I must just go to slide number 26 or 27, where it talks about revenue information. I assume that the figures that are presented are also in the financial statement, in the annual report. I will not go into detail, but if that detail is required at a later stage, the CFO will go through that. For me, it is just to highlight the trend. All the revenue information, we, as I have indicated, we collected 201 million, and the total operating expenditure was 370 million. So you can see that currently, the rate at which we are collecting vis-à-vis our operational cost is a concern, because it requires that somebody must assist us with the deficit. Hence our turnaround plan is aimed at addressing this so that we are at full capacity in terms of our operation. Last year we received the 111 million from Treasury, which assisted in plugging that difference. We have not received that yet this year, so we are pushing hard to collect so that we can sustain ourselves. The other target was the management fee rate. I've previously raised the issue of the management fee. Management fee is a very controversial issue. We have a guideline from Treasury that gives us a leeway to charge management fee on a sliding scale. When we negotiate contracts with clients, they usually use their upper hand
to force us to accept a very lower management rate than what we would ordinarily regard as market-related rate for us. We're targeting 5.5%, but you can see on average we collected 4.7, which is slightly improved than last year. I think last year we were below that. I think we were around 4.2 or so. The next slide just gives a breakdown of our core elements of expenditure. As you can see, there has been quite a cut in terms of expenditure. Our expenditure used to be in the region of about 430 million. We have come down now to 270 due to both austerity measures as well as the old process where a number of staff were laid off. We also haven't really spent much on capital expenditure this year because of the budgetary constraints that I've highlighted. Chairperson, I'll just speak to this slide because it is important. This is just an indication of the implication of the challenges, overall challenges that we face on our financial status. The cash flow largely indicates the money that we receive versus the money that we pay out. I will just refer you to the next numbers. We are projecting these numbers between now and the end of the financial year. We can see that if things continue as they are, we have put very conservative estimates here. We are projecting that we will have an overall deficit of about 10.3 million. However, if our initiatives to collect what is due from the department, I think it will help us to turn that figure into the black. That takes me to the next slide, which summarizes the amount that are owing to IGT. Chair, the total indicated there is 95.422, 95 million, which only 12.8 of that is current amount owing, which are within 30-day acceptable collection period. Now, you have amounts that are more than 3 months, more than 90 days, which is 29.7 million, and we have some of the amounts which is more than a year, which is about 31 million. We have taken extraordinary steps now to collect that, as I indicated earlier. We even engaged treasury. We also have been interacting with Department of DPME, monitoring and evaluation, because they have been also inundated by calls from certain service providers that were requesting payment. In terms of breakdown of the key highest debtors, Chair, I must clarify this. We said top five debtors. This is purely because the system picks those big numbers because of our configuration, Chair. If you look at your portfolio, number four, public works, there is a slight error there, Chair, because these are not national public works amount owing. They're supposed to be standalone because these are provincial public works and they are independent entities. So the National Department of Public Works is owing us only a current amount, so they are not in arrears at this stage. It's just the 225,000. I've addressed this matter with the CFO so that going forward we don't even need to bother about this, because what the system did, it added all these amounts to total to 1.3, then it was above the 1 million threshold for high amounts. But if you look at them individually, they are below the threshold. So
we would like to, we will just focus on Free State, for instance, because Free State is always at quite almost close to a million. At least we can deal with them. But the rest, including the national office, is not a big thing. But the other amounts, Chair, are worrisome for us, the other department. I am engaging with the HODs directly in the meantime. But this money we need desperately in order for us to stabilize our cash flow. I'm not going to go into each and every figure, but I am engaging with the DGs where appropriate, as well as HODs, both formally and informally, Chair. That process is underway, but we just indicating that there are such challenges that IDT is facing, and the committee must start taking note of that.
And maybe before we move out of that slide, on top we have the Department of Education, below we have the Department of Basic Education.
Yes.
And the top one referring to higher?
Provincial Department of Education.
Okay.
The lower one is DBE. The reason we have a breakdown of provinces there is the ASIDI program. It's a national program, but it's implemented in those provinces. The Accelerated Social Infrastructure Delivery Initiative.
Always clarify. Yes.
Thank you.
They know what you mean. Clarify.
The last one on the finance matter, Chair, speaks to some of the initiatives that we are taking to address this. I can just summarize by saying the board has taken a particular interest on this matter because it's a lifeblood for us. And we set up a task team and we are monitoring on a weekly basis the situation. And we are hoping that it is going to pay dividends. And I personally, myself and the executives taking charge or acting executives taking charge on this matter, Chair. I would like them to move, Chair, towards the end. I'm concluding now because we have covered most of the presentation. Just as a concluding remark, Chair, on slide number 47 or 48, just for the matter that we wanted to draw the attention of the committee again in a summary, that the minister earlier on indicated that he has taken an initiative on looking at a high-level team that will be interrogating our new business model and looking at options for ICT in the near future. We welcome that because the plans that were put in place, we are ready to engage in terms of testing the efficacy of those solutions. The second one is that ICT is facing a higher risk of litigation. And this matter we reported to the committee previously. The situation hasn't changed much because other than the management fee that you saw due to ICT, we also get funds that are dedicated to paying service providers directly. And the delay that have caused in not transferring that money have put us into trouble with the service providers. Some have taken us to court, some are still threatening to take us to court. And we do believe that the operating model and the turnaround plan will be able to take us out of the situation that we are in because it addresses all the fundamental flaws that we picked up both at operational level but also in terms of strategic level, in terms of the new vision for the sustainable ICT. This is something that even my engagement with the DG of Treasury was that they are keen to deploy technical people to really look beyond that report in terms of specific details. So we will be waiting for that task team to come so that we can implement the turnaround in full, because so far we have partially implemented it. Chair, Honourable Members, Minister, thank you very much. The presentation was for noting and also highlighting some of the critical issues for the Portfolio Committee.
Thank you very much, CEO. Unless from the team there's one critical point left out, giving that opportunity. Acting CFO, what is fine? 1 point from the minister.
Chairperson and members, Portfolio talks about the high team. What we have realized is that there are certain projects, very critical projects, where we are behind, be it schools or whatever, not just IDT, including the Department of Public Works. Now what we have done, I've had engagements with the Treasury and public enterprises, where we're trying to get high-level teams of engineers. You know that in ESCOM, they are going down in their build now. They're going to have a lot of skills which are not utilized. We want to put them back into a high-performance center, which is under our PMU. But that team, because they also do not have the necessary resources, is also, they are going to piggyback on us. We want to finish up all the outstanding programs which have not been done, so that when we close the financial year, everything is done. Instead of wanting to take new projects having not finished all the other projects, it's not wise. And I've said my focus should be that, both in the department and in IT.
Thank you very much, Minister. Panel members, we delayed the tea break because we wanted the IDT to finish. I think we can now take the tea break for 15 minutes, which means by 1:45, if we can be seated. Those that have gone to take the tea break, it's fine. They can watch us. Now going for can you say for tea?
I'm going to go to the next one. I